Hey, Mama, you don't have time to be messing around endlessly scrolling to find a caregiver for your child. Let me clue you in to my trick to save time and my sanity when finding a sitter. SitterCity.com. SitterCity knows what they're doing. They've been helping busy parents find the perfect sitter for over 20 years. While other sites overwhelm you by throwing hundreds of random profiles your way, SitterCity matches you with caregivers who actually fit your needs. No endless scrolling, no guesswork. I love that all caregivers undergo ID verification. They have background checks, specialized qualifications, and real parent reviews to know if they showed up on time or really know how to handle my sassy toddler. And if I need help, I can talk to a real live human, not a robot, with SitterCity's delightful team. You know, my employer pays for me to get SitterCity completely free as part of my benefits. Yours could too. SitterCity is my go-to for a smarter, simpler way to find reliable, trustworthy care. Don't wait. Go to SitterCity.com/XX and get the help you need.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
We are getting reports that your son has been found in your basement. Sir? Mr. Bothell, are you?
What?
Yeah, we are getting reports that your son has been found alive in your basement.
What?
Yes, that's what, if you could hand me that wire very quickly. Yeah, we're getting that right now how could your son be alive in your basement?
I have no idea.
Now, this is just a report that we are hearing out of Detroit that we're trying to confirm. Everybody in New York, please get on it. Let me know when we get Charlie Langton from WWJ. Sir, did you check your basement?
I checked my basement. The FBI checked my basement. The Detroit police checked my basement. My wife checked my basement.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, a deep dive crime podcast which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Now, even though this case is far less notorious than the Shannon Matthews case in the UK, I've covered the Shannon Matthews case, in which a mother totally fabricated the kidnapping of her child, it certainly has remnants of that particular incident. So if you haven't seen that particular video of mine and you're interested in these kind of events, then please do go and have a look. But let's go back to what played out to eventuate in the interview that you've just seen. So in June 2014, in Detroit, Michigan, 12-year-old Charlie Bothwell V, who's often actually referred to in the media, and I will, for the purposes of this video, refer to him as Charlie, he was reported missing by his father and stepmother. Now, let's be clear. When a child goes missing, it is the worst possible scenario playing out because children are vulnerable, children are absolutely at risk, and whether we like to acknowledge it or otherwise, there are some horrendous predators around in our communities. So when a child goes missing, even though you just want to imagine that they're going to come home, often your stomach just drops and you think to yourself, this is going to be the worst outcome possible. Because time and time again, unfortunately, we do have those outcomes eventuate. So this child's gone missing. The absolute story catches fire, headlines all over the United States, because one of the things that's really concerning is just his disappearance is really unsettling and it's also quite baffling. So there isn't necessarily a reason why this child would run away, at least according to the parents, and no one has reported seeing him. And that's one of the biggest quandaries, because what we expect in any missing case is that to a certain point the individual will have been seen and noted. And obviously we live in an era of CCTV, we live in an era of mobile technology, so often Even though the child may have disappeared into thin air, the truth is that you will see certain segments of the day that they disappeared, and that's not played out at all here. No one knows what's happened to him. Now, 11 days after his parents report him missing, clearly, as you will note from the video at the beginning of this, Charlie gets found. And he gets found in the most unexpected place, which is found hidden behind household items in the basement of his own family home. Now, bear in mind, that's a place that will have been searched several times by the police. So how on earth did he end up there? And most importantly, why was he there? Did he go of his own volition, or did somebody place him there? Now, as you will have noted from the initial video, the father's, what can we say, emotional reaction was literally caught on national television, and it was during an interview, and I'm laughing because if you guys don't know Nancy Grace, the people in the US will know Nancy Grace. Of all the people for this video to unravel and this information to come out in front of, Nancy Grace is your worst nightmare. When I say this woman takes no prisoners, she is a person who will chase whatever story, and she does not care about being compassionate to individuals that she has a suspicion of. Quite the contrary. She is one of those individuals that are so set in caring about the victim experience that you better be an innocent party if you have anything to do with this woman, because she will come for you. So it plays out in some kind of divine intervention that she is the person interviewing the father when he is told by her that his son is in fact alive. And not only alive, hey, he's been inside the house all along. Like I said, pretty challenging experience for the father to undergo in that moment. Now, of course, at this moment in time, the case then shifts from a missing person drama to a really devastating, severe child abuse, torture and manipulation case. So all of a sudden, this father, who is in front of the cameras doing this very good job of seeing like the dutiful parent who cares deeply about his missing child, is now in the line of fire. So let's talk about the Bothwell family. So before Charlie's case essentially catches on fire internationally in the media, the Bothwell family were relatively unknown to the public. They didn't stand out in their local community. And the father in this case, Charles Bothwell, who we'll refer to as Charles, he was Charlie's biological father. And Charlie's biological mother was not living and residing with Charlie or Charles. They'd obviously separated at the time that he was with his father. And it turns out he was quite young when that separation occurred. But there was a woman present in his life. There was a mother figure to some degree. So Monique Dillard Bothwell was Charlie's stepmother. And she actually had children from a previous relationship. So they were a blended family. There hasn't been a lot of identification about the wider family. There hasn't been a lot publicised or indeed verified about those issues and those siblings. And as I've already mentioned, they're growing up in Detroit. And Detroit, with respect, even though when I think about it, it represents quite a lot about the house music scene. So I've kind of got really fond associations with it. In truth, it has become a city with quite a few socioeconomic hardships. There's been quite a lot of high-profile criminal cases, and they also have quite a high level of child welfare concerns that are reported. So potentially the funding that is available to both the law enforcement and the child protection services is not as forthcoming as ideally it should be. Now, the Bothwells were not immediately known to neighbours or even the authorities as some kind of place of turmoil. There weren't lots of calls out.
Imagine for a minute, imagine the best version of you, where you look and feel your best self, where your confidence shines through every day. This is how your skincare routine should make you feel. An easy to use system giving your skin exactly what it needs so you look and feel your best. Well, imagine no more, because Meaningful Beauty has arrived. Businesswoman, entrepreneur, and supermodel Cindy Crawford founded Meaningful Beauty with world-renowned cosmetic specialist Dr. Sabah to share his age-maintenance-focused skincare treatments and formulas. Cindy has been consistently using this breakthrough age maintenance system to protect her skin and prevent premature signs of aging for over 20 years. If there's proof of the power of consistent age maintenance, you only have to look at Cindy. She's not gorgeous for her age, she's just gorgeous. Inside and out, she's a shining example of a never-too-early, never-too-late-to-start-an-age-maintenance practice practice that meaningfully embraces your age. Nature provides ways to protect us from the environment, and Meaningful Beauty's secret is a unique and powerful antioxidant derived from a genetically rare melon found only in the south of France, a region known for women having beautiful skin. I love the 7-piece deluxe face and neck skincare system featuring effective serums, treatments, and creams formulated to work together to provide exactly what you need to achieve a more radiant, youthful appearance. Personally, I've been really loving the Youth Activating Melon Serum. It smells so delicious, feels incredible, and my skin looks amazing. And I've been getting so many compliments on how my skin has been looking recently. Over 5 million women have used Meaningful Beauty for its innovative formulas that help achieve radiant, younger-looking skin and hair so you can look and feel your best at every age. That gives you confidence to go out and live your life fully, whatever that means to you. Amazingly, after using Meaningful Beauty for 8 weeks, 100% of women said their skin looks vibrant and bright. It's never too late and it's never too early to start taking care of your skin. Try the Meaningful Beauty 7-piece deluxe face and neck skincare system for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. And remember, your confidence is beautiful too. Tomorrow's gorgeous starts today. Go to meaningfulbeauty.com/glow to receive 25% off and get the targeted treatment duo gift set for free. Go to meaningfulbeauty.com/glow to receive 25% off and get the targeted treatment duo gift set for free. meaningfulbeauty.com/glow.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
By child services. There weren't calls out by the police. And from the outside looking in, Charles, the father in this case, apparently seemed like a dad who did take some degree of interest in his son's life and his boundaries within his behaviour. So he had this really quite rigid belief system as to how behaviour should play out. And he wanted Charlie to become really physically fit. He felt that it was really important for his son to become academically engaged. And of course, we would all agree that as parents, we want the best for our children. We want them to be fit and healthy. We want them to thrive, ideally in education, if they attend mainstream education. You know, it's nicer if they're doing well. And we want to think about their future attainment, and that matters. However, in spite of that kind of being the surface level, you know, we want, as I said, our children to do appropriately in their lives the best they can. But the way that we handle that kind of desire, that's subjective to us as a parent. And really compassion, love, and taking time out with our children to encourage them and inspire them, that's the way to do it. But that's not the way that Charles does it. So from the outward appearance, when people hear him talk about what he wants for his child, people see that as a positive reference, but that's not how it is. Because very clearly from the get-go, when the police start to investigate this case, it turns out that the way that Charles is trying to inspire Charlie to actually succeed in life is to just be an absolutely torturous individual in his life. So essentially, he just carries out these really punishing regimes of exercise schedules and lots of other mistreatments that we'll talk about later on. Now, by most accounts, Charlie himself, he was described as a quiet child, quite a reserved child. But again, just bear this in mind. If you are a kid who's growing up in an environment of abuse, the last thing you are going to do is to be loud. The last thing you are going to be doing is being gregarious, because you know what? It usually results in you being punished. And actually what we see where children are concerned is very, very often in abusive situations, they make themselves as small as possible, literally. From a really early age, they will just curl up quietly and try not to get noticed, because at the end of the day, you know what happens if you get noticed, because you are totally at the risk of abuse on a constant basis, because you can't control the predator who's living in your life with you. Their moods are indicative of their reactions. You don't have to do very much to find yourself at the end of a slap or at the end of a punishing experience. These are things that play out time and time again in child abuse cases. So it doesn't surprise me for the slightest bit that he is quiet and reserved. And even family members who are actually outside the immediate household, so grandparents, aunts, uncles, They hadn't raised any red flags about Charlie, but they'd also recognised that he was quite a quiet child. But like I said, there was nothing so untoward about his actions, his behaviour, his presentation, that actually made people in the local area or within the family network feel that he was at any point of risk. But again, that is not uncommon in child abuse cases because children literally learn to suffer in silence for years. Part of that is out of fear, and part of that is because they feel that if they speak out, the consequences of that is so destabilizing to their normality. Bear that in mind. A lot of people imagine that children just want to remove themselves from the family environment when it's violent and abusive or sexually abusive, etc. But that's not the case. Very often, the status quo is what they're used to, and the idea of destabilizing it is pretty terrifying. So they become a part of that continuation of silence for fear of changing their experience because they don't know whether it could be worse elsewhere. And also, the family members who were involved in that household, they keep the mistreatment concealed as well. Now, Charlie's schooling situation, that was something that became a point of contention and also confusion after he disappeared because there were a lot of conflicting reports that came out. People didn't know whether he was attending traditional school, whether he was being homeschooled, or even whether he was out of school due to disciplinary reasons. But one absolutely consistent thread is that Charlie's academic attendance was sporadic at the time of his disappearance. So it's very likely he wasn't in regular classroom environment. And of course, what happens in abusive households, the last thing you want is a teacher noticing that a child is being abused, because teachers cause a lot of problems for abusers. They cause a lot of problems for predators because they notice things like fingertip bruising. They notice children who are becoming emaciated because they're not being fed. They notice withdrawn kids and they report. And so in a household where abuse is playing out, withdrawing a child from that situation where it can be noted is very, very common. Now, when it came down to Charlie and his relationship with his parent, the step-parent, he lives with his father primarily, and also his stepmother, Monique. Now, as I've said, the clear dynamic in this household was that Charles, the father, is a really strict disciplinarian, and he has this incredibly harsh belief that to rear a child appropriately, you have to be incredibly rigorous with discipline. Now, Charlie's stepmother, although she, I would believe, is not entirely in the same league as Charles, she certainly participated in the approvement of the methods that he used, and therefore she is complicit within that kind of treatment. There were a lot of allegations that said that basically the actual discipline in the household went far beyond the normality of parental control. So let's just talk about a few of those things. So Charles, the father, would absolutely insist that Charlie follow these really rigid exercise routines. And this was if he was doing anything wrong. So these were perceived misdeeds that would then have this really harsh punishment applied where it involved exercise. Now, again, everybody out there who is a parent, we all want our children to stay fit and active. It's just part and parcel of a healthy childhood, but you don't want to use exercise as a punishment. You don't want to put kids off for the rest of their lives, do you? You know, I'm a mum who sent my boys for years to gymnastics. They were elite in comp in gymnastics, and I was very proud of that, mostly because, you know, I thought it was quite cool that they could do backflips. Thought that would impress the girls. Let me tell you, it did. So I was right. But once they got to 16 and 14 and they really didn't want to carry on, well, that was their option to stop. At the end of the day, I don't want to make it punitive. And that's because I wanted them to have a really healthy connection and association with exercise. And now they are both totally healthy and fit, go to the gym, Thai boxing, all these other things, because they always saw exercise as something they wanted to do. So it's counterproductive to do what Charles is doing to Charlie. And apparently they were absolutely horrific, these particular regimens. So they could include hundreds of push-ups and sit-ups and lots of other exercises, and failure to complete them within a set time frame would literally mean that Charlie would get beaten or he'd get additional punishments. Now, bear in mind at the very top when you watch that video, one of the things that was clear when the police found Charlie was that he was emaciated. So you imagine trying to complete exercise regimes when you are starving, when you haven't had enough hydration. That is a punishment both internally, physiologically, and also psychologically, because you've been deprived of your absolute needs on a just human level. Now, the father's rationale is that he had this desire for Charlie to lose weight, or he wanted him to maintain this physical fitness. But the reality is, the authorities said after they found him, no, these were punitive, abusive, and absolutely excessive punishments, and it was all about control. And like I said, this kid was emaciated when he was found. So this isn't about father wanting Charlie to maintain a healthy weight. This is about him depriving him of his actual human needs. Now, we don't know a lot about whether CPS or law enforcement had ever had any formal complaints about the abuse prior to June 2014. There is nothing noted, so I'm going to assume there wasn't. But I believe that if anybody had actually had constant contact with somebody like Charlie, that would have occurred. But the chances are that Charles kept him really isolated to protect his own position in this situation where he isn't brought to justice for the actions that he's committing on his son in the privacy of his own home. Now, on June the 14th, 2014, Monique, the step-parent in this case, and Charles, they report to the authorities that Charlie has gone missing. Charles and Monique basically say that Charlie's vanished. There's absolutely no clear signs when the police arrive. There are forced entry. There's no signs of abduction at the family home. And they tell the police that he had, in their words, a habit of not strictly following rules. Let's just unpack that for a minute. So what do you think the reason is that he's left? Well, he doesn't follow rules. Have you got some examples of not following the rules? Yes, I have actually. We said that he had to do 1,000 sit-ups, 1,000 press-ups, and that if he didn't complete it in a particular time, he'd be punished and beaten. So sometimes he fails to do that, so he gets beaten. I'm just going to put these handcuffs around your neck, in fact. Just the small handcuff bit around your neck. Well, that's going to be very small for me. I won't be able to breathe. Yes, yes. It's strange, that, isn't it? I'm just following these new protocol and rules that I'm applying in my own mind to you right now. Obviously, that didn't happen, guys. Just to erase that as an actual reality. That was just my fantasy spilling out into this video. So, of course, it's all Charlie's fault. Charlie's run away or Charlie's disappeared because he doesn't follow rules. As if not following rules means that you'll just disappear one day. Now, after almost immediately filing the report, local law enforcement literally start this protocol for a standard missing child investigation. And they reported that in those early stages, both Charles and stepmother cooperated, at least on the surface, so they're answering questions. They did allow some searches of the property, because obviously it's really important to start at origin. And if a child has gone missing from the home, you need to be clear that the child isn't in the home. And you also need to be looking around as to whether you're dealing with a missing person or a crime scene. Now, the Detroit Police Department investigators then start to canvass the local area. They're speaking with neighbours. They're circulating Charlie's photograph, because obviously the most important thing is to get it out there that he's missing and to see if anybody's seen the child. Now, when it came down to the fact that they're dealing with this very serious missing child scenario, and again, this is in a city like Detroit where there are daily criminal concerns, investigators didn't want to waste any time. So they're going around, they're checking the hospitals, they're checking social service agencies, and they're also checking the immediate neighborhood. And it's days that pass, and so they escalate the search, and in the end they actually ask the FBI and other agencies to get involved because they're getting nowhere. So there's posters going up everywhere. Father and stepmother are going ahead and giving statements to media outlets, and they're basically just expressing, as you would imagine and as would be in line with what would occur if you were a parent who'd lost a child, you know, you're being desperate, you're expressing that desperation to find Charlie, you're pleading and beseeching the general public to just come forward with any information that can bring him home.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And I would say Father Charles, in this case, he portrays himself as this really anxious parent who's just desperately waiting for any news about his missing son. He's working alongside community members. He's handing out flyers. He's just encouraging anyone with any information to come forward, as we would expect. Now, law enforcement, bear in mind, when they started in the home environment, which is where they begin when the child goes missing, and they start searching again and again, they're meant to diligently do that, right? I mean, if you've got a child who's missing in the home and there's any chance that the child is in the home, surely you're going to turn that child up because they're in the home. But like I've said, they search the house a few times and Charlie is nowhere to be seen. They also speak to friends and extended members of the family, just asking, do you know anything about Charlie's disappearance? Do you know where he might have gone? And like I said, this is in the backdrop of that house being searched multiple times. So the official stance is that Charlie isn't located during those searches. And of course, from the get-go, Charlie's father, Charles, and stepmother, Monique, are being questioned, and they're saying, we've got absolutely no idea where Charlie might be. In fact, sometimes they're kind of implying that Charlie might have run away. Actually, that would be an assumption that would be one that could be made if you knew that the reason the child would run away was because he was living in a hostile, abusive environment. I mean, with respect to Charlie, if he'd elected to leave of his own volition, that would be understandable because of the backdrop that we understand about the horrible life he was living, because he was living in a horrendously abusive situation. Now, I would say it doesn't take long for the investigators to become a little bit suspicious. They said that there was just something about the way that Charles was acting, and also Monique was really calm. And that just doesn't align with a typical panic that parents will exhibit when their child's disappeared. You know, I appreciate that step-parents might not feel as engaged in that situation as a biological parent, although some will be even more engaged than that. The reality is you could afford the step-parent maybe a little less connection, but not a calmness. Because even if you had an awful relationship with a child and you were with the partner who's the parent of that child, the way that you feel about your partner is really going to be why you react in a panicked way, because you're going to be thinking, oh my God, this person I love is going through the worst moment in their life. Now, like I said, this creates a national storm. Local media in Detroit are really covering Charlie's disappearance. They want to bring this child home. National outlets pick the story up. It reaches platforms such as CNN and HLN, because the notion that this little boy who's 12 years of age is missing in Detroit, basically the whole community feels this urgency, and people are sharing his photographs on social media because that's just like wildfire, isn't it? Because good people like you and I, we go out of our way to advertise and highlight when children go missing, because anybody can make a difference to that scenario. If somebody catches sight of a child, then you can make a difference to bringing that child home. And TV hosts, especially those focusing on crime and legal issues, take a real interest. And as I say, Nancy Grace, who is very much known for her, what can I say, confrontational style and really highly charged interview style, she takes no prisoners, is what I'm saying. She books Charlie's father for a segment. And I think she's one of those individuals, she has this deep curiosity and deep inquisitiveness about the people who are saying that they have lost a person in their life. She will definitely interview people that she suspects of wrongdoing. She won't say that from the get-go, but you'll get a sense of her just not quite believing what's being peddled in the press. And she's often the individual that will really do these gripping and sensationally charged interviews that are really powerful to watch. And actually sometimes really awkward to watch as well, because like I said, she takes no prisoners. She asks questions that other people wouldn't ask. Now, of course, Charles, the dad in this case, he says, yes, I'll speak about my ordeal. Because bear in mind, to the general public, this is obviously an opportunity for him to amplify the search efforts, and the national audience are going to be able to witness this. It will spread information. But also, when it comes down to the general public, we are really compassionate and we're really sympathetic to parents who are looking for children. So we will watch, because watching that parent in a vulnerable, desperate state And their need to keep it in the public eye is something that we will absolutely connect with. And that level of empathy that we share means that we will work hard to do our best to keep this in the news. Now, the problem about Charles is his media appearances didn't necessarily hit in the way that they were meant to. So a lot of people in the public just felt that he didn't necessarily come across as somebody who was firstly sticking to his story and whose demeanour really was in line with a parent grieving the loss of a child, albeit the fact that this is a missing child, you're still dealing with a loss of a child. Now, some people genuinely did see him as a concerned dad reaching out for help, because not everyone is as suspicious as you and I, but there was this dichotomy that seemed to be very pronounced. He was just somebody who seemed to be saying he was struggling, but kind of came across as a little bit false. And of course, this becomes hugely pronounced while he's on live television and the news breaks that Charles has been found alive in the very house where the father lives. Now, that particular clip that you saw at the very beginning, it became a viral sensation, rightfully so, because of the raw shock that just plays out on live TV, you know, right in the middle of their exchange about Charlie going missing. Nancy Grace interrupts the conversation and says, "Charlie's been found in the basement of your home." Now, understandably, you've got a live feed here, you know, the cameras are capturing his response as a father. And again, it's really odd, because if I was in a situation where I genuinely thought my child had gone missing and then they're telling me that my child's been found in the basement of my home, I would literally forget the cameras. I'd be asking 1,000 questions of the interviewer. If she knew more about this situation playing out than I did, I am going to be asking questions. I would be like, "What do you mean? Tell me what's happened. Are they okay? Where have they been?" Because obviously I wouldn't be thinking, "Oh, my child has been in that basement the whole time." Bear in mind, the law enforcement had actually looked around the house several times in the search of it. So in my mind, if I was an innocent parent in this situation with a child who genuinely had gone missing, I would be imagining they've come back and now they've been found in the basement, but where have they been in between? So that's a very natural reaction, to just respond in that way. The cameras have gone. All you're caring about is the person with the information, and it isn't like that. And it just seems like he's trying to figure out a performative experience where he's gonna get across how he thinks he's meant to come across in such a circumstance. It's one of the most surreal moments in recent true crime history. It genuinely is. And like I said, it does nothing for him, because he just seems like he doesn't quite know what to do with that information. And if you love your child and you've been told that they are safe, if you've been told that they are home, you would be elated, confused, dramatic in your responses, desperate for information, taking your feed off, saying, "I'm going home now, I'm going to go and see my boy." There would be an absolute celebration at the moment that you hear it, as well as just that sense of, "Oh my God, how is my baby? What's going to happen now? What can I do to get to them as quickly as possible?" They are the kind of normal human reactions, and it's nothing like that. Now, it turns out that Charlie's found on the 25th of June, 2014. This is a whole 11 days after he's initially been reported missing. And you all know that when a child has gone missing for more than 24 hours at that age, you are thinking this child is likely never going to come home. Sometimes they do, but often we have the worst case scenario play out. And after 11 days where nobody has seen him, there's not been a whiff of him in the public area or arena, there's no digital footprint, the child hasn't got food, hasn't got clothing to change constantly, you're thinking to yourself, this child is possibly dead. Let's be real, that's how a lot of us feel. And that's because time and time again, that kind of reality is proven. But here we are, where law enforcement find Charlie behind boxes and behind a large dresser in the basement of the family's townhouse. Now, the door to that section of the basement was actually locked. And when they were looking at the initial statements from the police, that indicated that in spite of the fact that he was found in that particular place, they stuck to this story that the basement had been searched previously. Now, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, if there's a child in the basement, yes, in a separate locked room, why hasn't that child been found? But arguably, people, often in these circumstances, will do a very quick search of the house. And if they don't seem to be turning up a child or they don't believe the child is there, then maybe they have more of a desire to actually get the information out to the public because they genuinely believe that the child has gone missing. And it could be that that bias played in to the investigators' lack of searching appropriately. Or it could be, of course, that Charlie wasn't actually there when they did the search. Now, of course, there are rather a lot of questions when he's found, such as how had he managed to remain undetected for so long? Was he hiding? Was he locked up against his will? These are all absolutely standard questions you would ask. Now, they looked at Charlie and they didn't need any investigation into his health to know that he was emaciated. They said he had visible signs of weight loss, he had bruising, and he had other physical marks. And those marks were consistent with repeated physical abuse. And they're not talking about an individual occasion. They'll be talking about the fact that the bruising will be healing in certain areas and potentially new in other areas. So this means there has been a consistent pattern of abuse. And when authorities found Charlie, he was really scared. And one of the things he was really scared about was he didn't know what was going to happen to him next. Bear in mind, he's obviously been living in a very abusive situation. He was dehydrated, so he hadn't been getting the right amount of water. He was malnourished, and that means that it makes sense that he was confined somewhere and he had a limited access to food and water. They take him to hospital immediately. They want to get him medically evaluated, and that medical evaluation comes back as his state being very poor, so he's very unwell. Now, as soon as medical professionals and child protection services realised the severity of the situation, at this point, Charlie's caring, scared, worried, anxious, devoted father and the stepmother, who's calm, weirdly, but again, has acted as if they're really concerned that Charlie has disappeared, potentially been abducted, potentially ran away because he doesn't follow rules. Suddenly, they've gone from being these parents who are concerned to becoming prime suspects in what appears now to be not just a disappearance, but a case of ongoing child abuse and also false imprisonment. Now, of course, father and stepmother say, absolutely not, we've done nothing wrong. We are completely devoted to him and you are all casting aspersions upon us. They instead say that perhaps Charlie ran away to the basement and just stayed there undetected. Now, I don't know about you, but of course that makes perfect sense. I mean, when you're a child, if you're not thinking to yourself, well, I want to teach all these people a lesson who treat me really badly, so what I'm going to do is, because I hate the torture and experience of abuse, I'm going to go and I'm going to lock myself in a place with no food and no water and no sanitation so that I can make myself really, really ill. And that will really teach these people who also constantly make me really, really ill a lesson. Said no child ever. Now, bear in mind, this explanation absolutely clashes significantly with Charlie's own account. The child who has been in that place and knows exactly why they were there. He says, listen, it was my dad and my stepmother who literally forced me to remain in the basement behind a locked door, and it was as part of a punishment. And we're going to believe Charlie in this case because Charlie is the emaciated, dehydrated, underweight child.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
He has got bruising all over the body. Why would he be making that up? The reality is he's obviously suffered a great deal at the hands of these caregivers. Now, those allegations, when you dovetail them with the other evidence of physical abuse and forced excessive routines, show the type of horror the child was living in. And believe me, when the public find out about this, well, the response is swift and pronounced. Don't get me wrong, most people were absolutely relieved, thrilled that this child was still alive, especially when so many missing child cases end in tragedy. But then the suspicion begins. So they start to accuse Charles, the father, of orchestrating this ruse for reasons unknown. Perhaps they wanted to conceal ongoing abuse. Perhaps he was going to start a GoFundMe at some point, or hope that somebody else was going to create a GoFundMe so they could make a bit of cash off the back of it. And then the outrage begins when they realise that this boy has been subjected to the most horrendous abuse. The anger, the demands for justice are rightfully enormous. So the case has now shifted rapidly into a criminal investigation, and the focus is on the father and the stepmother. So in April 2015, this is several months after Charlie's discovery, both Charles Bothwell, the father, and Monique Dillard Bothwell are also arrested. They face multiple charges. Now, the most severe charge at that point was torture. Torture actually carries the potential for life imprisonment under Michigan law, and second degree abuse they were also being charged with. So the torture charge itself shows just how severely the prosecutors viewed the treatment of Charlie. And this was especially in the backdrop of the forced exercise beatings and imprisonment, because obviously they are such high level abuse. Now, the definition in Michigan law of torture typically involves the intentional infliction of extreme physical or psychological pain or suffering for any reason. And what the prosecution have to do is prove that the defendant intended to cause cruel or extreme physical or mental pain. And second degree child abuse under Michigan law involves conduct that results in serious physical or mental harm to a child, or an act of omission that results in such harm. And the prosecutors, they believed absolutely they had sufficient evidence that the father and the stepmother's actions met that criteria. So the repeated punishments, the strict regimens, the alleged beatings, the isolation in the basement. When you add all of that together, they say this absolutely fits these charges. Now, details started to emerge that really did tell the public about the horror that Charlie went through. So the court documents indicated that Charlie was struck with objects, including a PVC pipe. He had bruises and scars on his body. There were many other injuries that were documented by medical professionals upon his discovery. He was isolated, so he'd been kept locked in a basement behind furniture, so he had a restriction of freedom of movement. So that's a form of coercive control and psychological abuse, and you've got those forced exercise regimens. So Charlie himself said that his father forced him to perform relentless daily workout routines. So not only was this physically exhausting, but he just had this threat constantly that if he did not comply fully, he would be beaten. So that creates this extra layer of psychological torture and terror. Now, ultimately, the charges filed against both individuals indicated that they obviously felt that stepmother and father were as guilty. Now, whether that was going to play out in reality during the case or otherwise, at that point, they felt like, no, she had many options. She could have absolutely reported the abuse. She could have left. But her being there, that complicity, allowed this kind of abuse to play out. Now, during the preliminary hearings, both parents appeared in court multiple times. Bond hearings they had, other pre-trial procedures played out. Both of them, of course, at the outset said absolutely not guilty. Now, the defense attorneys, what they did was they argued that the couple, are you ready for this, never intended to torture or abuse Charlie. In fact, they just tried to cast this basement confinement as this unintentional oversight or just a misunderstanding of the child's behavior. Can you just let that sink in? So, you know what? On reflection, obviously, locking him in the basement might be construed as torturous and unfair. But what we're saying is, was it really? Because actually, it's just a bit of a mishap, you know? It's a bit of confusion about what's appropriate or inappropriate. And we're saying that we didn't quite figure that it was inappropriate because actually we're just trying to be really good parents. It makes no sense. It's not an unintentional oversight. A misunderstanding of the child's behaviour. You starved him. You refused him enough water to the point where he was dehydrated. But this is what the defence are going for. Now, the prosecutors, they just bring in photographs of Charlie's injuries. They also bring in testimony from Charlie about his horrendous daily living experience and conditions. They also brought in evidence of the father's documented discipline routines. Now, whereas initially the couple originally faced a torture charge, now bear in mind that would have carried the possibility of a life sentence, Sadly, as far as I'm concerned, this charge is eventually dismissed by the court. Now, the precise legal reasoning probably involved the difficulty of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the specific intent to torture had occurred rather than, shall we put it in inverted commas, just abuse. It's just horrible, isn't it, that we're actually calling it just abuse, but that's essentially what they were legally exploring. So we can't say that this was torture, absolutely. It could just be construed as abuse. Personally, lock them up, throw away the key. I know that's how all of us feel, but this is how the law works. So if the prosecutors can't demonstrate that defendants deliberately sought to inflict extreme pain and suffering, the charge has to be reduced or dismissed. Now, in this case, the court ultimately decided that while there was sufficient evidence for child abuse, the threshold for torture as defined by Michigan statute was not met, or at least not provable to the required legal standard, which is pretty terrifying, isn't it? A child can be withheld from their freedom. A child can be denied food and water. A child can be beaten black and blue, but apparently that doesn't get classed as torture. I mean, if that isn't torturous, I don't know what is. Now, perhaps the most powerful aspect of the prosecution's case was Charlie's own testimony, that brave little boy. He actually testified that he was beaten regularly with an object. He described it as a PVC pipe. He was forced to do hundreds of push-ups, sit-ups, and other exercises on a daily basis. If he couldn't complete these tasks, he would literally be beaten or punished in some other way. Also, he had limited access to food and to water, especially during the period he was kept in the basement. He said that he lived in a state of fear and he had absolutely no one to turn to. Now, that testimony in itself demonstrates the vulnerability of that child. And this is also why so many children stay silent when they are being abused, because it takes somebody walking in, removing them from that situation, making them feel safe before they realise that their journey of horror is at least over physically. They've got to go through the trauma psychologically, but at least they are free from that horror and those predators that are around them. This is why so many children remain quiet, because they don't believe that that freedom will occur. They think they'll be in more trouble if they speak out. And it really does take that kind of intervention for a child to start finally feeling safe. Now, by 2016, one of the things that became clear, according to the courts anyway, was that a protracted trial could be really grueling for Charlie, because he'd have to relive his trauma in court. He'd have to be in front of the legal system and the public inquiry that would occur, because we're all very interested in these kind of things. And the prosecutors and the defense attorneys, they start getting into negotiations, basically to talk about what they can arrive at on a joint decision will be appropriate for the parents in this case to plead guilty to. Now, I'm not saying I agree with how this played out, but eventually the father, he agreed to a plea deal that saw him plead guilty to the fourth degree child abuse. And in exchange for that, the more serious charges, which were certainly a lot more serious, they included, as I've said, second degree child abuse and torture, they get dropped. Monique Dillard Bothwell, the stepmother, she also accepted a plea deal. Now, those details aren't actually widely disclosed, but the reports do indicate that parts of the agreement likely included eventually the expunging of her record. She stayed out of trouble for a set period, which again, I think is just horrendous. Basically means that she'll end up with her record wiped. Make that make sense. Honestly, no person should be allowed around children if they have willingly allowed the kind of torture I've explained in this video play out in front of their eyes. But hey, I'm not the person who makes these rules. I'm certainly not this person who agrees these plea deals. And we all know that sometimes those plea deals are not appropriate. Now, from a psychological standpoint, if you just think about the prolonged child abuse that Charlie went through, if you think about the control, the fear, the isolation, the way that the adult abuser uses physical punishment, emotional manipulation, all about ensuring compliance, the child's self-esteem erodes and they genuinely become too afraid to seek help or to run away Understandably as well, this means that when it comes down to a court case, the prosecutors are highly aware of the impact of trauma on the child. And to be a witness, you have to reach a particular level where they believe that it will be safe for you to do so. And sometimes that means that they will not have you give evidence, even though you are the slam dunk evidence giver, to protect you in the long term. Arguably as well, though, that can be very, very conflicting, because that can mean that people like Charlie's parents manage to get away with the worst type of treatment and indeed end up pleading to a lesser charge, which means that their lives pretty much carry on as normal. Now, as I've said, most stepmothers will often build loving and nurturing relationships with stepchildren, but we do know from research some relationships reveal tension, competition, resentment. And Monique Dillard Bothwell, she was apparently alleged to have absolutely joined Charles in enforcing the punishment exercise routines. So her involvement suggests either shared intent or at least shared acceptance of the situation. And it does go without saying that in some abusive households, the partner will adopt the dominant parent's behavior.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Chumba. Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
If you're out of deference or fear or out of a desire for unity in discipline, alternatively, that partner may already harbour authoritarian attitudes themselves. Now, we don't have conclusive evidence regarding Monique's internal motivations, but her legal troubles absolutely indicate that she was considered complicit in the maltreatment, which is terrifying when you imagine that her record is likely going to be expunged in the future. Now, beyond the physical abuse that Charlie experienced, locking Charlie in the basement, that's emblematic, absolutely, of coercive control. And that basically is defined by a pattern where the abuser imposes really severe restrictions on the victim's freedom, communication, and resources. And coercive control with respect can take loads of forms. It can be emotional manipulation. It can be threats of further harm or potential harm. It can also involve isolation from peers or family members who might otherwise have intervened. Now, at the time that Charlie was found, we know he had absolutely endured repeated physical, emotional, and mental stress. And when it comes down to Charlie's experience, you know, one of the things that is clear is that he's not just been a victim in the sense that he's endured all of those things at the hands of his parent or step-parent. The reality is his journey of abuse does not end when he's freed, when he's placed somewhere in safety. He has the rest of his life to try to overcome what happened to him. And when we look at research, when it comes down to victims of abuse, often, although I don't want this for him, but often they will experience anxiety, depression. They'll have difficulty trusting other adults, relationships they encounter. They'll struggle to form healthy relationships because they're so disturbed by what happened to them. And they really need a huge amount of help, extensive therapy, stable living conditions, a supportive environment that encourages healing and personal development and empowerment. And that doesn't always come to fruition, particularly with the limited funds that so many states have in America, and the same in the UK where I live. So he has got a long journey. And one of the things that really bothers me about this case as well is that Charles, the father in this case, this man who's managing to literally reduce the charges against him because of the fact that Charlie's been through his struggle and probably will struggle in court, and because they just want to come to an agreement where some kind of guilt is assumed. We have to remember the manipulation of this man. He was on TV acting like he was desperate to find his missing son, all the while locking him in the basement. Now, the legal proceedings and admissions in court do paint this starkly different picture to what you saw on television, where this guy is pleading for his son to return. So he ended up pleading guilty to fourth degree child abuse. So that means he admits absolutely he engaged in physically abusive behaviour toward Charlie, which discounts that he was ever a good parent, and also supports the fact that he is a predator. And like I said, a predator who is so willing to act like it's all about him. He goes on national television to seem like a devastated parent when he's actually a perpetrator of abuse. Now, during that case, when it came down to the court, one repeated theme was this need that he had for fitness and discipline in Charlie. So Charles basically does this permission-based thing within himself psychologically. He rationalizes that this forced exercise and the beatings wasn't actually a means of control. It was just about helping Charlie to get the best body image. I mean, literally. I'm going to beat you because I want you to feel better about yourself. I'm just gonna throw it out there. I don't think that's gonna work. I don't think you're gonna make me feel better about myself beating me. No, you're wrong. What I need you to do is 3,000 sit-ups. I'm not going to feed you. You're not getting any water. But this is in the interest of you. I'm a good parent. I'm rigorous with the rules, but you'll thank me in the long term. I swear to God, the predator within, the manipulator within, the individual who can look through such a warped perspective is not a safe human to ever have around children. Now, bear in mind, this is very common. In research, when it comes down to child abuse cases, and I've worked on child abuse cases many times in my career, and let me tell you, there are times that I have had abusers conflate abuse with discipline. Just going ahead and being able to justify the horrific cruelty by telling them, the victim, and indeed people like me who are working in the safeguarding of children's experience, that this cruelty was beneficial. Literally. It is a story as old as time, because that's how they justify it in the head. I'm not a bad person. I'm not a heinous predator. I'm not somebody who's torturing my child. I'm trying to be a good parent. And that's exactly what he does in this case. And publicly, bear in mind, what can we say about Charles? Quite comfortable in front of the cameras, giving interviews, engaging with the public to locate his missing child. And yet privately, what do we see? According to the charges, according to the testimony, this is a man capable of absolutely extreme methods of control and violence. Now, just think about that. Who does that remind you of? Who does that remind you of, guys? What do we think about certain individuals that can be incredibly violent and sadistic in one space and then charming and nice and sweet and appear like a devoted parent in another space? Who do those kind of things remind you of? Yeah, a little bit on the psychopathic spectrum, aren't they? Because that split between public persona and private behaviour is a key element in so many abuse cases. This is when the abuser does present as charming, concerned, let's say even altruistic, and all the while they are concealing this malevolent conduct within the home. And like I said, psychopaths compartmentalize. Psychopaths justify their actions. Now, ultimately, Charles goes ahead, like I said, pleads guilty to fourth degree child abuse, and he was given, drum roll, wait for it, you're not going to be happy, 18 months of probation. I find that horrifying. When I first saw the clip and it sparked my interest in this case, I thought, man, how many decades has this absolutely malevolent human being got? And I ended up feeling so disappointed. 18 months of probation. Now, don't get me wrong, they also mandated anger management classes, as if that's going to help this kind of monster. Also, the one thing that I say is beneficial in this moment is that he did lose custody of Charlie. But I think that Charlie deserved justice, not just being removed from home, because you have to remember the messaging to the victim. This is something I talk about all the time, both in my private life, my public life, my professional life. You need to send a message to the victim. You need to say what you went through is deserving of justice. If I minimize a sentence, if I make a sentence palatable for the abuser and do not consider the impact on the victim, then the victim walks away saying, did I deserve it? If somebody's allowed to almost starve someone, dehydrate somebody to a point where they were so severely ill that the medic said, look, he's in really poor health. If you're allowed to do that and the consequence is you don't serve any time in prison, then the child growing into the adult believes, well, my journey, my experience meant nothing. Not even a day custodially. That in itself is despicable messaging wise. Now, it turns out that Charles, the father in this case, was barred from contacting his son. So that does sever at least the relationship in the eyes of the law, at least during this period where Charlie is a child. I mean, down the line, I presume that they could rekindle some kind of relationship, though I'd hope that would never occur. But I do feel that that messaging is so damaging towards Charlie. Now, Monique Dillard Bothwell, the stepmother, her role was considered less visible than Charles's. It was similarly scrutinised during the process, and the prosecutors absolutely believed that she was complicit in the torture and the abuse. As we know, they did not secure, sadly, a torture conviction. So what the court documents implied was that she aided in the severe disciplinary measures, or she'd at least known about them and let them continue. Also, it was alleged that she was personally responsible as well for restricting Charlie's food and water, and that she contributed to the environment that kept him hidden in the basement. So what they basically said was the very fact that Charlie was locked in that basement and that there was a dresser blockade and there was concealment that had occurred on both parties, stepmother and father, that it was a coordinated attempt rather than a single person act to keep him there. Now, details of her plea deal, like I said, they're undisclosed. But the belief is that she didn't actually get a felony conviction. So she isn't going to have a record that remains palpable for people to see, to recognise the kind of engagement she had in this abuse. It's likely going to mean that if she stays out of trouble, it's likely going to mean that if she successfully stays out of trouble, her record will be expunged within 6 months. Personally, again, I think that's horrific, because what does that say to the victim? Like, she's literally going to get away scot-free. Now, I appreciate that it's the job of Monique's defence counsel to negotiate that she's some kind of less culpable party. I imagine they also threw her in as some kind of victim. Maybe there's some serious mitigating factors that people believed. Like I said, maybe she said that she too was controlled by Charles. But I just find it...
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So shallow when these individuals get such a tiny amount of punishments. Now, in January 2016, essentially the case reached its resolution in the criminal justice system. Charles, the father in this case, did plead guilty, as I said, to fourth-degree child abuse. That's a way less severe charge than second-degree child abuse. So the father ended up being able to avoid the trial, and also that meant that he was able to avoid the possibility of more significant penalties, including incarceration, which he absolutely deserved. Like I said, 18 months probation, mandatory anger management classes, and loss of custody and a no contact order with Charlie. As I've said, even less for Monique Dillard Bothwell. It's quite concerning to me that that was all agreed. Now, a key reason behind those plea deals is likely, as I said, the desire to protect the child from re-traumatisation. Lengthy trial would absolutely have meant that Charlie had to relive the abuse on the stand, but I would say he relives it every single day. And that's the really challenging part here, because Charlie isn't going to walk away from this feeling justified and validated. So will that not re-traumatise him? Now, plea deals on the whole, they mean that you save money. There's not a costly court case, as opposed to some degree expedites justice. And at least it secures some measure of accountability, although I do believe in this particular case, a very low level of accountability. A lot of people like me don't think that that particular punishment fits the crime. Obviously, others believe that Charlie's well-being should be at the heart, and essentially that guilty plea in itself means that he'll be validated. Like I say, I genuinely don't feel that will be the case in the long term, because I don't feel that justice was served. Now, understandably, on a positive level, Charlie is now hopefully living and thriving with people who care for him. He's in a situation where he's safe, where he's fed, where he's nurtured, and where he will, over the long term, be able to heal to some degree from this horror. Now, understandably, we don't know where Charlie's living now. We don't know who he's with. Also, we don't know whether Charles, the father in this case, has any desire to re-establish contact. He could try to petition the courts for visitation rights, because obviously there are situations where the courts believe it's better for a child to have some kind of relationship with a parent. I'm hoping that that no contact order stands the test of time, because I do not believe it would be in any way, shape or form in Charlie's interest to actually have any connection with this monster. I think one of the things that is also striking about this case, and I'm sure that you guys all agree as well, is that for 11 days, despite police searches, Charlie wasn't found. Understandably, a lot of people since then have said, look, there needs to be new protocols which require repeated systematic searches of homes in similar missing child scenarios. Now, for me, as I get to the close of this case, I really struggle. I just feel the plea deals and the relative leniency of the sentences has not satisfied anyone, including Charlie. Yes, they ensured that Charlie was removed from his abuser's care. The father did go ahead and forfeit custody, and hopefully that means he's got distance from the environment that caused him so much considerable harm. But with respect, it demonstrates that even in scenarios where children are bruised and broken and hidden and emaciated and dehydrated, still these predators can walk away with a slap on the wrist. I mean, don't get me wrong. I do feel that sometimes the big G.O.D. intervenes, that live broadcast moment in which the father learns of Charlie's discovery, the fact it got national attention and controversy, the fact that people remember his face, as I always will, the fact that because of that moment, it absolutely contributed to ensuring a full investigation and also the involvement of higher level authorities. And that meant that it mobilised individuals and organisations in particular to reflect on missing child search and how they're handled, and also the way in which communities can remain vigilant for signs of abuse. That's really important. And like I said, I feel like there's some kind of divine intervention that literally transpired in front of our eyes. And maybe if Charlie had been found under other circumstances and hadn't garnered that kind of attention, the spotlight would not have been on this case as it was, and changes systemically can take place because of Charlie's legacy. And like I said, yes, the man who causes abuse and the woman who causes abuse, they have a stain now on who they are. People will always see them as monsters because of that national attention. So yeah, they only got slap on the wrist as far as I'm concerned, but everybody knows who they truly are. And to some degree, that's hopefully a life sentence, because communities talk, neighbours know, and that chatter will never go away. They will always be the abusers of Charlie. Charlie did survive. Let's talk about the positives before I close this case. Let's talk about the fact that that little boy endured horror, endured torture, as far as I'm concerned. I don't need the courts to say whether it's torture or otherwise. I think it's plain to see for all of us it was torture. But he lived. He got to go to a new home. He was brought back to our world. He didn't die in that basement, and that could have happened. Who knows what would have happened if he hadn't been found? Because I have to say this at the very end. What was the motivation of the family? It could have been that they wanted a GoFundMe. It could have been they wanted attention. It could have been that they're such megalomaniacs that this is the way that their psychology works. They're so narcissistic, it's all about them. So, hey, let's get the spotlight on us. But they had searched that house. That means that for Charles and for Monique, they thought that they could do whatever they wanted with him, because that child had disappeared from sight. The world was looking for him outside, not inside. So what would have happened? What was the end goal? What was the end game? Because the medic said that Charlie was in a really poor state. So Charlie could have died. And why would the father be on television asking for him to be brought home from the community at large when he knew exactly where he was? Was the end game to just appear like grieving parents who had lost their child and no one ever knew what happened to Charlie? And all the while, Charlie would have been decomposing in that locked basement behind the furniture that had been placed there. Because there was only one way this would end, and that was that Charlie would eventually die. And I think that that's probably the point that's missed in this story, because they had absolutely no desire to tell the truth. That's why when the interview with Nancy played out, he was still talking about the fact that he was a victim in his child's disappearance. But all the while, he was starving that child to death in the basement. And that, for me, is the real story here. But like I said, we end this video with a positive note. Charlie has hopes now. He can begin a new chapter in safer circumstances. We don't know about his current life, rightfully so. That's been kept out of the public eye. He's a minor. He's experienced a deep violation and an intrusion on his privacy because of what happened. And with respect to Charlie, the resilience that he showed in telling the truth about the horrors he endured, that highlights his capacity for survival. And also, of course, it highlights the way that when a child finally finds their voice, hope can break through that darkness. And my God, I hope above hope that that hope absolutely drenches him with future possibilities and dreams and aspirations. I hope that in the end we hear about Charlie. I hope he comes and tells his story when he's over 18. I hope he shows us the resilience that he's learned from the experience. And I hope he allows us to share that survival story, because I would really like to know that Charlie is okay. And I'm sure that every single one of you listening to this does too. I wish him all the very best. And I wish those POSs who harmed him the absolute opposite. Like I said, guys, I do believe that I'm leaving you with that sense of a punch in the gut where justice has failed. I understand the motivations for the court for agreeing those plea deals. I do not feel it was appropriate. I do believe that Charlie deserves so much more. Equally, like I said, when it comes down to it, remember this man's face, remember this woman's face, because they are the people who, for the rest of their experience here on this planet, deserve to be absolutely, absolutely judged at the highest level by the community court. Because that's what we're good at, isn't it? You know, people can walk free, but they don't get to walk free from our own judgments. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.